Thank you, Bridge. And so our next speaker is Professor Eddie Dufourmont from the Université de Bordeaux, Montaigne. And he's going to talk also about Japan and this very interesting notion of harmony as constructed in Japan in these very specific historical circumstances, you know, Kakume, and so maybe.
Thank you very much. To introduce my topic, I would like first to start with a recent change in Japan. Maybe, as you know, in Japan we use specific term, names for a period of time during which the emperor reigned. So Heisei was related to the previous emperor. And since the emperor resigned and have been changed to a new emperor, so the change also, the name, the era also changed for a very ugly name, which is Reiwa. What is interesting is even now, when we speak, you think about Japan, one of the very important word coming is harmony, which is actually wa. And the change itself, for me, is a very recent proof of such word. And Japan, as national identity, is often associated with harmony. Contrary to French, they don't make strike, they always quiet, they're very polite, and so, and so, and so. Which is also means that in Japan, there is also no revolution, no political violence. And in fact, such idea, which is of course not true at all, is related to historiography as have been developed in Japan in modern times. And I would like to take some topics inside Japanese historiography in modern times to show you how Japanese historians dealt with such problem of kakume, which is the Japanese word for revolution, with harmony. Actually, the problem of political violence and historians, it's a topic very well known among researchers. And what I will present to you today is absolutely not my own research. I will just take the results of historians in English like John Brownlee, who already contributed greatly to clarify how modern historians have been impacted by the state violence to write history. And in Japanese history, we have, for example, two very famous examples how the really act of writing history has been impacted by political violence. The first example is Tsuda Sōkichi, who received a trial in 1940 because he was claiming that Japanese Shinto legends and so are just legends, which was actually a taboo during the imperial regime. And in 1940, as you can guess, it was not exactly the time to criticize the Japanese history and the Japanese legends around it. The second example, which is much more older and but very representative of such problem, is Kume Kunitake, who were one of the first modern historians and also one was the first to write about Shinto legends. And actually, he 1892, he was forced to resign because he just said that what is written in the most oldest books in Japan about the so-called legends and myths of Shintoism are just legends and myths. I mean, not historical facts. And even at such time, he was forced to resign. Those examples are very well known. I won't discuss about it. I prefer to introduce you to other topics. but to start, I would like just to clarify one point. Even now, the Japanese history has a lot of taboo. The greatest taboo, you can check it by yourself in Wikipedia. If you go to Wikipedia, you type emperor Wikipedia, Japanese emperor Wikipedia, you will have all the lists of Japanese emperors. And you will have the taboo coming by itself, which is the first emperor is supposed to be a man called Jinmu, who's supposed to have lived in the year minus 666, which is not related at all with the evil. It's just another thing, but anyways. And you have a long list of emperors going down to the actual emperor. So there is two problems to an historian. This is all liar. Jinmu never existed, and the actual emperor is not related at all to such legendary emperors going to remote past. And the biggest liar is that you have one line of emperors. It's a liar because serious historians in Japan or elsewhere already know that you have a lot of political violence, even in Japanese history, not only about emperors in general, but, anyways. The thing is, the most oldest books in Japan, Nihon Shoki and Kojiki, which have been written in the 8th century, develop a discourse in which you're supposed to have one line of emperor coming back to the so-called Jinmu, the legendary emperor. And such past written in such books have been taken in 19th century, as historical fact. It is exactly like some extremists in Israel who think that what is written in Bible is exactly historical fact, and they want to apply that to their own politics. So, to say that the imperial regime before the war was established on a very specific view of historiography, controlled by the government historiography, in which you should not speak about that. And of course, as you can guess, the political violence, especially the phenomenon of Kakumei revolution, was one of the most greatest taboo in the pre-war historiography. Second thing to start, what we call historiography in pre-war period needs some explanations. In Japan, historiography has been established quite lately. Maybe all of you know Meiji, modernization of Japan in 1868. But technically, the historiography has been established in Japan 30 years after, almost at the end of the 19th century, with the invitation of Ludwig Reis, a disciple of German historian Leopold von Ranke. And it's very interesting because the establishing of the modern historiography was exactly at the same time of the establishing of the creation of the imperial regime. So that's why politics and historiography in pre-war Japan were really, really deeply related. Which means that, in fact, I will try to show today what we call historians in pre-war Japan, especially during, let's say Meiji, Taisho period, are not necessarily professional historians. And I would like to show, with the few time I have today, that, unprofessional historians use deliberately Japanese history to criticize the government transport historiography. So you have kind of conflict around Kakumei between, the official discourse, which says there is no revolution in Japan, it's all peaceful everywhere, and some people who, on the contrary, we will use the political violence to say that no, we have in Japanese history violence, and which is good, we will use it. I will, with many topics possible about that, I will just choose 3 points deliberately. The first contrary point is the forgotten real first emperor, which is a man called Tenmu. The real first emperor in Japan is Tenmu. It's him who established the imperial regime at the end of the 7th century. And the interesting thing is he established the Japanese regime by making a coup d'etat, by killing his nephew. So if you go now to say to the emperor, you are the descendant of someone who, of a murderer who killed his own nephew, it would be a great scandal in Japan. You can try. Anyways.
Did you?
No, because I need the money to go to Japan, so I'm completely corrupted, sorry. The real Japanese story is that at the end of the 7th century, especially in the year 672, you had a man called Otomo, the Prince Otomo, which was the son of the king of Yamato, Tenji. And since he was the son of Tenji, he was supposed to be the next king of Yamato. Problem, his uncle was not disagree with. And his uncle started a revolt against his nephew and killed his nephew. And he killed him and took the power. That's why his uncle turned to be Tenmu, the first emperor, and Otomo was completely forgotten. He became Emperor Kobun, years after, in 1870. So that means, in fact, you had at the really first, start of the imperial regime, a phenomenon of political violence in the civil war. During centuries, it was taboo. And in fact, when Tenmu established his own regime, he ordered to write the first historical chronicle, which is oldest Japanese book, Nihon Shoki and Kojiki. And if you read Kojiki and Nihon Shoki, especially Nihon Shoki, you have no mention of Prince Otomo. Of course, the uncle Tenmu didn't want at all that people would know what happened for real in the past. But some texts after claim that Otomo reigned without saying that Tenmu was murdered him. But anyways, in Edo period, some thinkers in the so-called Mito school who begin to start to think that we should include Prince Otomo in the history. And why? Because everyone knew that he existed. You cannot say that there is Tenji and Tenmu, and if you wanted, as they wanted to make a big line starting with the legendary emperor Jinmu to the actual emperor, you needed to make Prince Otomo emperor. So they start to claim that. That's why when the government made another coup d'etat against the Tokugawa shogunate, the first thing they did, it was not to modernize the country. They claimed to modernize the country, but in fact, one of the first things they did when they took the power in Meiji period, it was to change history, to rewrite history, and one of the first things they did, it was to put Otomo Prince as Emperor Kobun, as I said, in 1870. So it means that Prince Otomo, which is not a famous people even for Japanese, but anyways, it became to start, ideologically speaking, for the Japanese government, a very important person. Some historians after when the circular studies start, begin to make research, of course, about Otomo, and some of them even put into question the legitimacy of Otomo as emperor, which was also, of course, a taboo. So the first essay, like the one of Hilade Korjo, one like a kind of example without any future, because after it was impossible to put that into question. Some others developed a very different view about such events, like Takekoshi Yosaburo. And he was, in fact, used such event, civil war event, in very different perspective. Around the same year, at the end of the 19th century, he was saying that ethically speaking, it was, of course, bad, but politically speaking, it was a very good way, a very good thing. So he was supporting that. Even after, you had other people, like during Taisho period, who said that, in fact, Otomo was not reigning. It was a girl. I will not enter into the details because it's very complicated, but you had a girl in the story also, and some people said that even after that, it was this girl who reigned after Tenji, and she has been, this emperor has been forgotten because it was a girl. Anyway. Well, I don't have time, so I fear that to lose time. So I will go directly to the controversy point two, which is much more famous thing: the civil war between the two imperial courts in the second half and 14th century. In fact, just to recall what happened. Maybe you know that in France, at the same time, you had a conflict between popes. One pope supported by the French king, and which was to be an antipope, and a pope in Italy. So it's very interesting because it was at the same time, you had a civil war between two emperors. You had two emperors. And the thing is, you had Emperor Go Daigo, who wanted to restore the imperial power, and you had the one lord, which was Ashikaga Takauji, who finally started a revolt against Emperor Go Daigo, and he chose another man in the imperial family and decided to make him emperor. So you had two branches, two emperors. And we, in Japanese history, we say that the Emperor Go Daigo belonged to the South Court, and the Emperor supported by Ashikaga Takauji belonged to the North Court. So you had the war between South Court and North Court. And guess who won at the end? The North Court. It means the line, imperial line, supported by Ashikaga Takauji. So in fact, the actual emperor is not only the descendant of an uncle who killed his nephew, but also the descendant of an empress transported by someone who started a revolution. So to say that, please keep it that, don't take any 50 pictures, or I'll get problems. In fact, the actual emperor, objectively speaking, I mean, in the criteria of Japanese history, let's say, is completely illegitimate because he's, by many meanings, as you see, related to coup d'etat, revolution, so completely illegitimate. Of course, you cannot say that at all in Japan today. But anyways, so the thing is, how Japan historians dealt with such huge problem of the North Court controversy. So, as you can guess, as soon as they created the imperial regime, the government tried to deal with such problem. So what they did, of course, it was to take Emperor Go Daigo line as a legitimate line, replacing the northern empress, to say the good emperor were the south. Of course, you will think that, but Meiji emperor was not related to the south, but it was not a problem for them. The source code was correct. As you can see, in 1883, emperors were called Tei and not Tenno, to give them kind of status, but not the same rank as Tenno, because Tenno was supposed to be above Tei, which is the normal word for emperor. And if you go, I don't remember, maybe someone can correct me, in Yasukuni Jinja, if I'm not wrong, there is still the statue of Kusunoki Masashige. Arno? Yeah. I completely forgot. Okay. Anyways, as you can see in the ukiyo-e, very close to the Imperial Palace, they even built a huge statue of a very famous warrior, which is Kusunoki Masashige, who fought for the South Court. So, as you can see, they try to concretize such managing of this problem even in architecture. So, what did historians with such decision of the government? Some of the first historians, in fact, took a very different position. The most famous is Yamaji Aizan, which is actually not a professional historian, academically speaking. He was not professor in university. He was a journalist and a political militant. He was the first at his time to write a book about that and taking position in a very different way, opposite way to what the government wanted to promote, because he wrote a book about Ashikaga Takaoji. Normally, historians were supposed to be to criticize Ashikaga Takaoji. He was a bad guy, he made a revolt against the emperor, blah, blah, blah. Yamaji Aizan, in fact, was not at all in such a position. In fact, he presented Ashikaga as a hero, of the warriors, to say that what did Ashikaga was explainable by the political context of his time, in which you have the samurai, and samurai disagreed what emperor said. Of course, to write that in 1999, it was completely taboo. So this book turned to be a great scandal. And it turned to be a great scandal also because of another man, which is Kita Sadakichi. Kita Sadakichi was at this time a young historian, and this one is a professional historian. And in one of the handbook of Japanese history for schools, he decided to describe the controversy of Northern-Southern Corps, objectively speaking. He decided to say that both of them are legitimate. And of course, according to the criterion of the imperial ideology, it was not a very recommended choice. And actually, in the year 1911, the prime minister himself decided to attack, to criticize Kita Sadakichi, to say this guy wrote wrong things. And in the parliament, a huge debate during all the year starts, which is called in Japanese the Namboku Cho Seijun Mondai Toka. Finally, Kita Sadakichi was forced to resign for his official post in the official handbook. He was not forced to give up his career as scholar, but he decided to be silent. One thing is still interesting, when we think about political violence and historians, we should be careful to not have kind of, simplistic view of things. Because, for example, bad and good people, you know. Because, for example, Kita Salakichi is also the very important historian who legitimates the annexion, the colonization of Korea. Because at the same time, he wrote articles saying that Korean and Japanese share the same ancestors and should then turn to have to be the same country. So one historian who contributed to the Japanese imperialism on one hand, was also able to be, a victim of the same government too, on the other hand. So you to see that things are not so, easy, simple to analyze. So to return back to the topic about the Southern-Northern Court, it's interesting to see that even after, some historians did not fear to speak about, and even Inoue Tetsujiro dealt with such topics. Inoue Tetsujiro is one of the most famous philosophers of this time, and it's the most important ideologue of the imperial regime. And in his famous book, Outlines of National Morals, just after the controversy, he wrote that historians should focus only on morals in order to maintain national unity. And he wrote also that, to him, the controversy on Ashikaga was a plot of anarchists, which is a bad word at this time in Japan. Despite such posture of Inoue Tetsujiro, some historians, even after, try to present Ashikaga Takaoji positively. I have found an example with Tanaka Yoshinari. He's in Nambokucho Jidaishi, who wrote about Ashikaga positively. And later on, a minister himself start to be a victim of pressure from fascist organization because he himself wrote at the same time during the Taisho period essays on Ashikaga Takaoji in very laudative way, and that such a fascist organization didn't like at all later on in the 30s. So as you can see, this controversy point was important not only in the 11 years, but even after. Another point, the phenomenon of revolutions in Europe. So it's not in Japanese history itself, but it's more in European history and it's used in Japan. In Meiji period, as I tried to show you, you had the government who tried from the beginning to establish an ideology to promote a very specific way to view history and a line of emperor, sacred, blah, blah, blah. But on the other way, even at this time, at the beginning of Meiji period, it is interesting to see that you have also people who try to use history or to study history and to deal with revolutions, but in very opposite way. And one of these attempts to use history can be found in a man called Nakai Chomin, who used the English and French revolutions as models. I'm talking about basically 70s and 80s of 19th century, which is a period of the so-called Jiyū Minken Undō, the movement for the freedom and the right of the people. At this time, it was not yet decided that Japan should be an authoritarian regime. That the existing government wanted to, but on the opposite, you had a movement among people who wanted to promote the rights of the people, to promote freedom, equality, and so, and wanted to have kind of democracy. And Nakai Chomin was one of the most important figure of such of such a movement. And Nakaichi Omine realized that Japanese people don't know necessarily history. So he wanted to use the European history to show to his to Japanese that revolution is not necessarily bad. Revolution is can be good because it's necessary to get democracy. Before Cho Min, the French Revolution was not very well known among Japanese, and the few mentions of French revolutions at the beginning of Meiji period was very negative. Even Fukuzawa Yukichi, the most famous intellectual of this period, described the French Revolution as great revolt, great trouble, tyrant. And Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who is supposed to be in such books the father of the French Revolution, also was described as a very negative person. So before Cho Min, the Japanese had a very light notion of what revolution means in history and how it could be useful or not in to their own situation. So Cho Min decided to translate Rousseau, which is very famous for that, but also a lot of texts coming from the French Revolution and also French historic books about the French Revolution. If you know in details what he wrote, you have a lot of texts dealing with the French Revolution. So Cho Min was the most important person at the beginning of the Meiji period to promote the French Revolution. Himself, he wrote here and there that the French Revolution was good. For example, he wrote that politics during the French Revolution matched for the first time with the highest ideas of philosophy, which is freedom and liberty. And in other texts, for example, he also wrote that it's his gift of the great French Revolution to have clarified in Europe the ideas of political freedom and representative government. Okay. Okay. To be short, some people like Cho Min try to promote revolution in to their own political agenda. On the other hand, at the turning point of 19th century, you have people like Okakura Tenshin, who begin to start to promote harmony in the Asian history. And that's turned to be very important because at the same time you had the controversy about the North and South Court, you have a very radical changing with the revolution in China, who overthrow the Manchu throne and conclude with the Republic. To Japanese, the Chinese Revolution was kind of trauma, because it means that revolution is possible in Asia, and if it happened in Japan, in China, it could happen in Japan. So it's very interesting to see that in the conservative or extremist writing, nationalist writing in Japan, you have a change where you have the use of harmony to define Japanese identity, and with the idea that you have no revolution in Japan. And to that, you needed to have China, because China began to be defined as a land of revolutions. And such idea became so spread that it became to be like, I don't know how to say in English, tarte à la crème, like very, a very common idea that China is a land of revolutions and Japan is the land of harmony, which is actually Stefan Tanaka already shown to about the Orientalism. And it became so important that such idea turned to justify the political project, because when Japan invaded Asia in the 30s and 40s, he did saying that I will bring harmony He started in Manchuria with the harmony, which is the five races, and he ended with the so-called Greater Asia Co-Prosperity Sphere. So, when nowadays you hear Chinese or Japanese or whatever Asian government talking about harmony, please be aware of this. It's not innocent at all. Thanks for your attention.